RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. And tonight, we're going to have a little uprising here on the show. Hopefully, nobody gets too hurt, too upset. You know what? If we're lucky, we might just have a little revenge, too. So...
Who are you getting revenge against?
Oh, you know, all those other podcasts that are out to get us.
All right. I'm grabbing my bat.
I'm going to have a gun instead of running into the fray. I'm just going to stand back and shoot everybody.
That would have been a better idea.
That would have been a better idea. It was kind of like, I don't know, like 300, I guess. That's kind of the nearest thing I can think where you got two armies doing a melee.
And I was thinking Blazing Saddles.
It was. Yeah, there would have been great if there was a horse, Brick, trying to take down a horse in the background or something like that.
they run into a musical stage and start saying, throw out your hands and stick out your fish, that kind of thing. No, that would not be good. No, this was a lot more serious.
This was a lot more serious. And there was a lot of really interesting character building. I like it was a good end to the little mini trilogy they put together here without Oliver. And we learned a lot about Merlin in this particular episode, which was cool. We got our prerequisite dose of flashbacks. And so why don't we get into talking about it? But you can tell us a little bit about which episode we are going to chat about this evening.
All right. So let's get a quick summary so we know what we're talking about. It was episode 12 of season 3, Uprising. This aired on February 4th. Oh, February 4th. I can't believe it's February already.
I know.
Okay. 2015? My goodness. Okay, well, going by fast. This
We're over halfway through the season.
Yes, oh, my gosh. Oh, okay. Man, season 3 seems to be going by fast, even with that big long break. But I'm glad we're back. Uprising was written by Beth Schwartz and Brian Ford Sullivan. All right. I don't remember that name.
He's done a couple.
Has he? Okay.
Yeah, while you're talking, I'll see if I can find out which other ones he's worked on.
Well, when you have an easy name for me to pronounce, I don't remember it. I don't put it in my long-term memory. So I apologize to Brian, but you had to get a little more complicated. Now, it was also directed by Jesse Warren. I'm not going to remember that one either. Sorry, Jesse. No offense.
He was Brian Ford Sullivan worked on The Secret Origin of Felicity Smoke with Ben Sokolowski.
Sokolowski, I remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And of course, he's done a ton of stuff. But, yeah, that was the last thing Brian Ford Sullivan worked on.
All right. Well, congratulations on both your episodes, Brian. Well, this one, man, whew. Boy, that escalated quickly. Yeah, I mean, that really got out of hand fast. You know, Danny Brickwell, he's got control of the Glades. And the police have been pulled away, leaving the residents to fend for themselves, I guess. But you know what? Our heroes aren't going to just sit back and let that happen. Arsenal, Canary, Diggle, and Felicity are all doing what they can to hold back Brick's men. But they're outmanned and outgunned or out-arrowed or out-bow-staffed, whatever. Anyway, Oliver's trying his best to get home, but they don't even realize that he's alive yet. So... Merlin steps in. He wants to get in on the action. At least, you know, when he discovers that Team Arrow has found some evidence that Brick was actually the one who killed Malcolm's wife 21 years ago. Now, Thea, she wants Malcolm to be a good boy. You know, really turn it around after killing hundreds of innocent people and stuff. So, should the team let Merlin work with them to stop the madness? Roy thinks so, but, you know, the real leader of the team, that's right, the real leader, Felicity.
Yep.
She shows him why he's wrong and why they should never stoop so low as to working with the Dark Archer. Instead, they'll enlist the help of the citizens of the Glades, along with Sin and Ted Grant. Now, they almost do it, too, but it's looking pretty desperate until a familiar green hood shows up.
Just kind of floats out of the sky and lands in the middle of everything.
Aww.
Oh, yeah. That's a very nice summary. That's good.
Oh, thank you.
I wonder how it resolves.
Well, it's so much happening. It's hard to get it all in a little short space there. But this was truly a pretty action packed episode.
Yeah, I mean, again, since this was the kind of the end of a little trilogy, it was they were trying to wrap up a lot of different things.
Kind of a mini finale.
Mini finale, and it was definitely chock full of new information too that we were getting. Like I said earlier, there was a lot of Merlin stuff going on. He was the featured flashback artist of this episode, I guess. So,
flashback artist, I like that.
Yeah. So before we get into the episode, I just want to let everybody know. DC Comics announced today, right before we started recording, that they have they've canceled a number of their titles. They're doing this weird kind of pause for, like, I don't know, it's like 2 months or something like that, called Convergence. It's sort of their summer crossover event. And but when they come out of that, a number of their titles will continue on, and they're going to launch as like 25 new titles.
Yeah, they're getting rid of the new 52. They're not going to call it 52 anymore.
Yeah, because it's going to be like 49 or something like that.
Yeah.
They're not calling it the new 52, but a number of the series will still continue. But they're launching a bunch of new series. A lot of them sound really interesting. I'm kind of interested to see what they do. They're trying to make their series a little more accessible, modernized a little bit. And one of the series is going to be called Black Canary, written by, let's see, who is it? I just had the name here. Oh, Brendan Fletcher. It's going to have artwork from Annie Wu and Irene Koh. Interesting. They don't really have much information about it. They have a little, maybe it's a cover drawing. There's Black Canary kind of dressed up with the fishnets, but she's like leading a rock band or something on stage.
She's looking very, very Sin-like on this cover, except for the long blonde hair. She reminds me of Sin from
Arrow.
Yeah,
a little bit, I guess. Yeah, and one of the other stories, because DC gave information about different titles to different websites. This particular one, somebody else had said on one of their other websites, I'm looking at Bleeding Cool right now, but they said this should appeal to a lot of the people that watch Arrow, because they're trying to, I think they're seeing what's happening on the show and maybe trying to imitate that a little bit. One other title that we don't have written in our notes, but I saw mentioned, there's a title right now called Red Hood and the Outlaws, which is starring Roy Harper as Red Hood. It's being replaced by a series called Red Arrow or Arsenal. I can't remember which title they were using. Maybe it was like Red Arrow and Arsenal or something like that. So that should also be intriguing to people watching Arrow. So all those should become. They don't have a definitive date on all these, but they should be coming out probably in May or June. I believe is when their convergence event is done.
Excellent.
So we'll have more information about those as they materialize on the shelves. So, all right, Josh, so you want to talk a little bit about the uprising? Oh, no, I guess not the uprising, just uprising.
Just uprising, yes.
Singular. So, the title was pretty self-explanatory in this particular episode, I felt. You got these, the Team Arrow and, you know, gathering the citizens together to kind of, you know, band together and rise up against their oppressor.
Right.
That's pretty straightforward.
I was a little surprised actually that they did that. Now when they first were sort of generating this idea of, look, how are we going to go against Brick and his men, I saw them, you know, asking Ted, of course. Let's just call him Ted. That's a good superhero name. I'm Ted. but then they went to Sin, which I thought, well, I wonder what they're going with there. So I thought they were going to kind of get more individuals who were real capable of fighting. You know, I'm not sure who else they would have got, but
say Barry Allen.
I thought about that actually.
I know they just can't. It's like every time there's a problem, they just can't go over and go, hey, Barry, would you mind, you know, running by, just take care of this real quick.
Yeah. So, I mean, it surprised me that they kind of put the citizens in that kind of danger. But, you know, then again, you know, these guys are being oppressed, and I'm sure they want to fight back. And if they work together, they can do it. So they probably talked to people that were capable of doing it. It certainly didn't look like everybody in the Glades. You know, they just see old women with, you know, tennis racket whacking on people or their purse or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it was a mixture. Like, we've only seen a couple people in the Glade. Like, I couldn't really tell from the makeup of any of the shots who we were seeing other than our heroes. You know, it looked like there were just, you know, like, guys in the background. I couldn't really tell if there were women or anything like that. We saw there was, like, a bartender who was being, you know, threatened earlier. I didn't necessarily see him or anything like that. So,
I was actually expecting to see him. I thought they'd show some of the people from before, but they didn't. So, they looked like they were being pretty successful. But I also think that, It's kind of on the fence on how well they portrayed this. It didn't really look like they were really losing, you know, mid-fight. But it did look like they were getting beat up pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, who was it? Ted Grant got the stuffing beat out of him by Brick. But, you know, I mean, the dude's, his nickname's Brick. I mean, it's just... what do you expect? I mean, you're not going up. It's not like Marshmallow or something like that, you know. So, you know, they illustrated it by the fight against our characters and everything like that. So
that's true. That's true. They were getting beat up. Laurel wasn't. She definitely wasn't one of the top fighters in that group. I mean, she was doing pretty good, but
she wasn't doing as bad as she was maybe an episode ago.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
I think she's holding her own a little more.
I agree. And also, I think I said this last time, but I like seeing her grow as a hero. And I think I'm not seeing this. I don't think her time away from Oliver was the big suffering, you know, that I had mentioned that I think a real powerful hero has to go through in order to become as good as Oliver. But I did think it was really good training, you know, good on the job training for her.
Oh, yeah.
Going in the Glades and just, you know, jumping right in the fire and fighting these guys. So I think they kind of even alluded to that idea when they were fixing her up and she was talking about her scars. You know, I'll just add that to another one. So anyway, I just wanted to point out that I was enjoying how they're doing the hero development with Laurel.
Yeah, I think they're doing pretty well, and there was one scene that I think I was thinking about it more than I had previously, and it was the scene in that bar where, you know, Roy went in alone and got, you know, trapped, right? The guy's got the gun to his head, and they're about to phone it in, I guess, like, to take him hostage, right? I don't know why they didn't just kill him. You know, it's like he's worth more dead than alive, I would think, you know, to Brick. But I don't know. Anyway. And then Laurel busts in, and, you know, she didn't really have a misstep in that little battle. I mean, she took out the two guys and helped out Arsenal pretty well. So, that said to me, it's like, wow, she's really advanced as a as a fighter here. And
I think Roy even said that to her, that she was doing well. I can't remember what he said, as someone's training was better than he thought. Or
He said Grant's training was better than he
did. He
expected.
Say Grant?
Yeah,
I wasn't
Grant.
Sure. I rewound it twice to hear what he said, and I couldn't tell what he said, if he said Grant or not. I thought that's who he was talking about.
I got
to
tell you, it's a complete bonus to turn on the subtitles and watch one of these episodes, because sometimes you think you're hearing him say one character's name, and then it says something else. And sometimes it's funny because you can see that the subtitle says one thing, but they obviously at the last minute changed the line or something like that, so the character actually says something different. So it's telling. I don't know. I use that now as just a quick visual clue so I can get character names and locations.
Sure.
And stuff like that. So, but I think we can come back and talk a little bit more about Laurel. I think there's some other stuff I want to talk about with the Uprising, but Malcolm Merlyn, I feel, is a very, he was, this was his episode, I would say.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Which was cool. I'm glad we finally got around to getting some more information about him. And I still feel he is a completely despicable character. As me, and the host of this show and everything, and as a fan of these kind of shows, I just don't see anything redeeming about this character. I see that they want to make people feel a little bit sympathetic, and every time I start to go, oh man, boy, this guy's had it tough, and then he does some other just heinous thing that makes me go, nope, dude, you're still a piece of trash.
Yeah, I think that's intentional for sure.
Oh, it's absolutely intentional.
I don't think they want. I think they want to explain him, but not make you like him. Well, like him in a heroic way, because I like the character a lot.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, and don't get me wrong. I don't want to say that I'm not liking John Barrowman or anything.
Oh,
like
right,
that.
Right, right.
I think Barrowman. I don't. I think other people would not be able to get it to the level that Barrowman takes it to. I mean, because he does add several levels to this with his portrayal. And I had made a note here just to ask, what is it that you think makes him so fascinating, the character of Malcolm Merlyn? Because, I have a couple ideas, but I wanted to hear your thoughts.
I'll give you a couple of my ideas just off the top of my head. One thing I think is his tragic story. You know, I mean, people with tragic stories are fascinating. And even if you look at the bad guys in movies, that like just iconic bad guys and their tragic stories, you look at like, Darth Vader or even like Voldemort, or, just looking at their background makes them interesting to see how they got on that path.
Yeah. Jafar.
Yeah, that was a tragic tale. It's a bad mustache waxing.
I
think
you said it.
the thing that makes him the most fascinating is just John Barrowman's portrayal of him.
Right.
I think the way he's presenting him is what makes it fascinating to me, because I can think of, maybe some other B-list actors or something that they could have put in this. Mm-hmm. That made him more intimidating looking or something like that. And I don't think he would have been as interesting.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe intimidating would be another way to go with this character. He's what I think works with him is the fact that he looks like he's just a businessman, but then he puts on the Dark Archer suit or the League of Assassin, clothes, and he's not. He seems fit enough to be able to carry that off without you just going, this guy's kind of a joke or something like that.
Right. Like if I put on the suit.
You're pretty fit. So.
Sure.
I mean, the clothes would fit you. That's what I meant to say.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. I think I agree that probably Barrowman is the thing that makes him most fascinating. But also, as I mentioned, it's sort of the fact that the character does these despicable things, and like a good villain, he believes that the things that he's doing are correct, or that he's doing the things for the correct reason. And it's just, it's not. I mean, you know, you just see I think comparing him to Oliver, you can see the errors of his ways. And yeah, like you said, maybe that, you know, that's what makes him kind of this tragic character then.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, and you know, what's the word? Appealing or convincing? You know, Thea knows what he did, and Roy knows what he
did. Thea knows most of what he did.
Well, right. But I mean, she knows that he killed all those people, and she knows why he did it. You know, she knows that. Roy knows even more what he did, right. And yet he still is able to convince both of them that maybe working with him would be an okay thing to do. You know, I mean, he's convinced Thea that he's a good guy that's just done some bad things.
And I'm not sure if I'm confusing what the writers are doing with the character or what the character is saying, but I feel like not to say that the two different writers on this made a conflicting element in the story for it, but he talks about how he wanted this vengeance on the man who killed his wife, so he took that. But now he finds out it was actually somebody else, and that his life is ruined, and he needs to fix it. And like, once I get this guy, everything will be fine. You'll see. It'll be better. And, you know, I'm like, he's going off the deep end. I mean, it's like an addict. It's like, you know what? I tried to quit before, but this time I got this new, I found this new deal online, and they're going to help me quit. And, but that didn't work. But I know the next time, like, I can, I don't know. There's some stuff that gets mentioned by him later in the episode, you know, about the fact that once you kill, you know, it takes a piece of your soul. And he's, you know, we don't know how many people he's killed between the Joe Chill guy, you know, the Batman reference, right? But the guy that killed Bruce Wayne's parents was Joe Chill. You know, this mysterious guy that supposedly killed his wife, and then all the people he killed in the undertaking. But he just seems to think that, like, he's just one more step away from salvation, I guess. I don't know. It's,
well, yes, he just seems crazy. I think he does. I would say he is crazy. And for me, I think, you know, everything that he's done was sort of for the vengeance of his wife. Now, the undertaking wasn't successful. So I don't think he felt like that was a closure. You know, that was supposed to be for his wife. That was supposed to be for the city and for his wife, yeah. to help with that. Then he found out that the guy he thought killed his wife wasn't him. And so that hadn't been a closure. You know, so I don't feel like he's ever had this closure on that. And when he feels like he can, especially when it comes to specifics about his wife, I think, you know, I mean, that kind of makes you crazier. It kind of makes you crazy. It's kind of like you said, you know, I mean, I'm, you know, you can swear off, I don't know, chocolate, you know. No, let's not go extreme. But that's a good example. You can swear off collecting action figures. I'm not going to do it. It's just too much money. It's out of control. And then, oh my gosh, did you see this new one came out? Oh, I'll just get that one because that's a special one. You know, so he sees this particular instance, and this is this huge guy. Not only is he a huge bad guy taking over the Glades, but he's the one that killed my wife. So look at that. I'm doing good, and I'm finally getting closure on this. So, you know, I think you're right. He's crazy. That's kind of the crazy attitude. A hero would learn. A hero would realize that's what Oliver has done.
Hmm. Okay. I want to keep that. Let's take a pin. We're going to put that up on the board. I want to come back to that because a hero would learn about that. Okay. Hypothetically, What do you think, or how do you think Merlin would have acted or felt if Oliver hadn't shown back up or had allowed him to actually go ahead and kill Brick?
What do I think?
How would Merlin be different than how we saw him at the end of this episode?
Well, I think he would have killed Brick. I don't think.
Okay. But you can't answer the question with the question or with the part of the answer.
Well,
no,
I think he would. I think for sure he would have killed Brick. I don't think anything would have stopped him from doing that.
Right.
And so I don't. So you're asking me if it would have really given him closure.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess who's to know, but I mean, just, you know, you pay a lot of attention to the character.
Right.
What do you think?
Oh man.
Did you get closure when you took care of that one guy that one time?
Yeah, I'm good. no, you know, it's hard to say. Now there's a couple scenarios here. Now, had he killed Brick and then he'd actually been working with, you know, Team Arrow at the time,
mm-hmm.
I think he would have felt a little bit more like a hero. But if he'd killed Brick in these circumstances, Oliver hadn't stopped him.
Where he's on his own. Yeah.
Right. I think he would have started off by thinking that he was kind of, okay, look, I did it. You know, I did what I had set out to do. But then I think Thea would have found out about it and resented him for it. Because she didn't want him to do it. She didn't want him to be a killer. And so I think that would have affected him in a different way. In a way that was maybe a little regretful.
Okay.
You know,
that's
hard to say. I mean, it's hard to say where he would have gone, but
yeah, I mean, it's just an interesting exercise, I think, because earlier in the episode, and I felt there was Barrowman might have even been delivering the line with a little bit of pride behind it. But he tells Thea that, you know, you've got to learn how to kill. And she's like, oh, no, I just wanted to learn to defend myself. You're the one that's trying to push me to be a killer. And he's like, you know, but if people are coming to kill you and you don't kill them, then, you know, you're going to die. And he's like, well, I guess I'm a killer and you're not. And like, I think there was a little bit of pride behind that. But then he also goes on to what I had mentioned earlier, which was that every time you kill somebody, it takes a little piece of your soul. And I'm just wondering if he had been allowed to kill Brickwell, that might have possibly been the last piece of his soul. I mean, that may have just sent him over the edge. I mean, he already seems pretty far gone in that, you know, he's running, scared, ostensibly scared, for his life from Ra's al Ghul. And, you know, it's his daughter who's like, well, you taught me not to be afraid, so we're going to stand this out. And he's like, all right. So, you know, and he's looking at as Thea for redemption, to see if
it's almost like he's asking Thea for permission to do it. You know, like he goes to her or talks to her about it before he's gonna. I mean, he's sharpening his blade. You know, and she comes in and it's almost like he's kind of telling her as if you know. At first, I think he's just explaining it to her, but then he's almost like making an excuse for himself so she'll go along with it. I'm not explaining this really well, but you know, it's interesting. Right after that scene with
the blade sharpening
with Thea,
I think it was
the blade sharpening there, they have a little flashback, and that's where Merlin's talking to Tommy, to little Tommy, and telling him that he's gonna go find a place that will make him stronger,
right?
You know, but did he really, I mean, I don't know if he really got stronger because
I think he physically got stronger. They taught him how
to
deal with all that. But I mean, it didn't do anything for his emotional state. I mean, he's still the screwed up, you know, guy that he is. It's that thing where, I mean, I think it was the same scene where I was taking some of my notes where, you know, he feels very strongly about going after this guy. He goes after and kills him, and then he's like, you know, then he's filled with remorse, and he's like, oh, that didn't help anything at all. It's almost like, you know, oh, I really shouldn't eat this big plate of pasta because it's going to make me feel sick. You eat the big plate of pasta. Maybe it tastes good when you're eating it. And then afterward, immediately, you feel guilty about it. And you're like, oh, no, I'm never going to do that. Now I've got to go work out. And it's like, oh, my life's ruined because I ate some pasta.
I'm feeling some emotions coming through here.
I have to.
Is there a little guilt? Little.
I need to go somewhere. Like I'm the biggest loser or something like that. So work it all out. There was another scene. Just you mentioning the cut back to little Tommy, and there was little Tommy and little Oliver in this episode. But there was a part where I think it was Tatsu was talking to Oliver about how Maseo is the only one that can help Oliver to defeat Ra's al Ghul because the student can overcome the master,
right?
And Oliver, you know, but and she's like, but I don't know that you're ever going to get Maseo to help you out with this. And then it cuts to Merlin sharpening his blade, which I didn't make much of at the time, but you know, at the end, we know that Oliver goes to, you know, find Merlin and ask him for his help and everything like that. So I think that that was a little bit telling as well.
Yeah. I wondered, they kind of mentioned that right around the time, I think they even mentioned it again, right around the time when they flash back to Merlin going to... walking in the temple there, you know what I'm saying? When he first met Nyssa.
Yeah.
And I wondered who was, you know, Merlin's obviously the student. So yeah. Who was the master in that case?
Oh, well, I think they're talking about Ra's al Ghul being the master and Merlin being the student that will teach. So maybe Merlin will be the one to overthrow Ra's al Ghul. Maybe Oliver will learn from Merlin how to defeat Ra's al Ghul. Or potentially with this team up, Oliver will defeat Merlin in some fashion. I don't know. I guess there might be several different interpretations.
It's a lot of students, masters kind of thing going on there, you know. So, but I just thought it was interesting that they showed Nyssa.
I had just put that together as, oh, look, we're doing all the characters as little kids. So, like, you know, when Peanuts has a flashback or something like that. I don't know.
Well, it was 21 years ago, so clearly it would have, you know, Nyssa would have been a little kid.
Yeah.
Why show her? Why not show Ra's al Ghul? Or why not show, Maseo wouldn't have been there yet, but... you know, I mean, why her? Why as a kid? And then he even kind of had that interaction with her where, you know, she gave him his nickname. But I just thought that was interesting. And having to do with the student-master relationship and then having to do that. Interesting. I don't know.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. Josh, I hadn't put anything together with that. I just figured that... You know, Ra's al Ghul is not the one. And the fact that, you know, they showed him coming in and Nyssa's like, you know, I got to kill you. And he's like, oh, I didn't come here to fight. I came here to get trained. It's like, really, you know, don't you know in the League of Assassins, there's not too much difference. Like, you know, you always come to die. And if you survive, I think that's by your own graces.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's an interesting. I might have to go back and rewatch that sequence to see if there's anything else that pops out about that.
I really did like the flashbacks this week. Because it was such a Merlin episode, I thought the flashbacks were it put a really nice kind of not a twist, but you know, just a nice kind of flavor on the development of Merlin and why he is like he is. So. Cool flashbacks.
As my friend mentioned, he had Merlin had Bruce Jenner hair in the flashbacks. So
that current Bruce Jenner hair, or like no, I'm sorry,
original,
like past
original Bruce
okay,
Jenner,
gotcha,
hair,
yeah,
not current Bruce Jenner. The other thing I thought was interesting, I don't know if anybody caught on to this, the alleyway that Merlin kills the guy 21 years ago in is the same alley he faces off with Brick in.
I did notice that. I thought it was a pretty big coincidence, actually.
Yeah,
but it was good. It was good. That didn't bother me. Actually, I thought that I like those thematic elements when they call them back or whatever you'd call that.
Right. I thought it was a motif. I mean, I thought it was like, you know, a circular sort of relationship. You know, the first, basically the place where he made his first killing and the place where he didn't make his last killing, and you know. We could get into whole, you know, that he's born again now because he is trying to find redemption and stuff like this. I don't think it's going to last. I mean, I think when we've talked about him before, we've talked about that Scorpion and the Frog story.
It's his nature.
It's in his nature, right? I mean, he's a bad, bad man. So I think there's some other stuff to discuss with Merlin, but let's take a little bit of time here to talk about Felicity, because as you pointed out, she is, in fact, the de facto leader of Team Arrow at this point.
Ooh, big time.
She really carries the banner for Oliver. She is a large proponent of Oliver would have wanted this done a specific way. And, well, that's not how Oliver would do it. You know, we should do it this way. And Roy comes in and, you know, and says, you know, we got to assume Oliver's not here. And we just, you know, we can't continue doing things like that. Do you think Roy is right about that? I mean, if something has been working under a certain person's leadership, is it not, you know, when they leave, isn't it good to honor them by continuing to work for the things that they started your group with?
Yes, it is. Now, it's much more complex than that. I think what you said, honoring him, you know, with the work that he's doing, I think they're doing that by still fighting. I think they're doing that by working together and really doing the hard work they're doing. But I also think, on a kind of separate note, I think they're doing that by honoring the kind of code that Oliver had developed, you know, when he stopped killing people, which I think Felicity is, it's just, you know, truly ingrained in her that as a good person, you know, with a good soul, that's what she believes is the not killing and doing things the right way, you know. Now, Merlin would be a means to an end, right? But
yeah, Diggle says once the ends justify the means, that's the first step. And then Malcolm asks to what, and he says basically to becoming you, to becoming a killer. And that is true. There is, I personally feel that it, you know, you can't just let the ends justify the means. It's a lot of times it's the easiest thing to do. And if you're not necessarily paying attention to what's happening, those are the things you might do. You know, just, I need to accomplish this, so I'm just going to do this. Without thinking about what is the impact? What is my impact within myself? What is the impact within my immediate family, within my neighborhood, within my sphere, you know, that kind of thing.
And this is why I mentioned that Felicity was like the true leader here. Because, you know, Roy, I'm kind of digging Roy, actually, and I think I said I liked seeing him evolve too. I did. There's some things I still don't care about for Roy. I mean, not that I don't care about, but I just don't think he's ready yet, you know, for certain things.
Yeah, he's really stepping up.
He is stepping up big time, and I think he was trained a lot in this series too. In the last three episodes, you know. This is what makes Malcolm such a charismatic a villain. You know, he can convince Roy that, look, if I help you, you will accomplish what you're going for. And Roy's like, okay, all right. I mean, you know, it's not the best scenario, but I can see where he's coming from. But Felicity is more of a leader than that. Felicity, even more than any of them. I mean, she never even hesitates to say, no, we're not going to trust Merlin. We don't follow Merlin. This is not what we do. We've got to find another way to do it.
And Malcolm uses Thea to get Roy. I mean, whether it's conscious or it's sort of a more subtle thing, you know, he's like, you know, I was the only one that really wanted to help Thea during the during this uprising from last season. And Roy's like, oh, I didn't realize that, and, you know, and that, you know, because Roy still has feelings for Thea. I mean, he is, at this point, I feel Roy is really, really feels like a surrogate brother. Like, you know, he had romantic feelings. She says, no, I don't want to do that. And so he's like, fine, I'm going to still pay attention, take a look, you know, or watch out for you and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think that's absolutely right. You know, Felicity just says it's unconscionable to.
And I don't think Roy really has ever demonstrated that he thinks he's the leader. I haven't seen that in him at all.
No, I wouldn't think that. But, I mean, I think feels that he's got his say.
Right. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then I was going to say, now, Diggle, I don't – you know, I think Diggle had some leadership qualities there in the last few episodes. But he's still kind of standing on the sideline, and he's willing to go someone else's way if they can convince him. He's never really shown that. And Laurel clearly is not – a leader of the group, even though, you know, she's sometimes outspoken about stuff, but not the leader.
I mean, Diggle's just the messenger in this episode, which is kind of unfortunate. I feel like we knew where Laurel stood and Roy. They both felt that using, and their point was that they weren't going to work with Malcolm. They were going to use Malcolm as their tool. Mm-hmm. Like, fine, even if we don't do anything, we'll let him take care of it for us. And I think Felicity was completely against that, because whether you agree to join with him or you just let it happen, that's as bad as joining with him. But Diggle didn't even get a say in that. It was like,
did we put it
to a vote? They cut to Diggle, and then he goes outside and says, you know what, we're not going to do it. But it's like, well, okay, where do you come down? You know, I don't know. You know, maybe that would have just taken up too much more time for the episode, but I felt that there could have been a... I was interested in that philosophical conversation that they were having.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would have liked to have seen that, too. Although, what I can take from that is the fact that they sent him out there and what he said to Merlin in that way. I think it was clear that he agreed with Felicity. I think he was leaning towards her side anyway. I think he just needed somebody.
How did they win?
I think she convinced Laurel also, because they even said something about Roy doesn't agree. But, you know, I think she convinced Laurel as well with her speech. And I was going to sort of sum up with this about Felicity's leadership. I think she's still the leader. I think – well, and this is just my own personal philosophy, I suppose. But I think Oliver's wrong. And I think he needs to listen to Felicity. And she's standing her ground.
At the end of the episode.
At the end of the episode. She's standing her ground about her feelings towards Malcolm. So
okay. I want to touch on that, but we're going to get more into that. So let me just have a quick aside about Felicity here for 1 second.
Okay.
Malcolm has either bugged or has her computer or has a little camera on it like he used in Oliver's house.
Yep.
In what universe does Felicity allow someone to do that to her hardware?
I don't know. I would say probably bugged it. It's probably using her own camera against her.
When I first watched it, I was like, oh, he just attached a camera to it. But then in my later viewing, it looked like it was the camera on the laptop, even though it's a pretty big camera. I mean, it's nowhere near as big as like the one that I see on my MacBook. Yeah, and then, so he's watching them at the computer, and then they're having this argument about, do we use Malcolm? Do we trust him? And then Diggle goes outside, and Malcolm's like, hey, so what's the, you know, what'd you guys decide? And Diggle tells him, and he seems surprised. Was he not watching at that point? I mean, maybe because he was in the alley, I guess, but I don't know. I just, that bothered me.
It bothers me a little bit that Felicity doesn't know. As a matter of fact, I thought of that a couple weeks ago when they first showed him watching them. Because who else knows computers better than Felicity? Nobody. But I don't know. Maybe
wait,
there's
wait, wait. Did
how
we,
would you
was he watching them? Because, I mean, I remember him busting it, you know, breaking in a couple times. Well, a lot of times here. Was he looking at through their computer?
Well, that's what I'm wondering.
Am I forgetting this?
What, he saw them. He saw them looking at the evidence against Brick. He could actually see them.
Oh, yeah, in this episode.
Yes. But
I'm sorry. I thought you meant the previous episode.
No, I think he did it in a previous episode as well.
Oh.
I'll have to go back and check now. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. Maybe my brain's just telling me that's what I saw. But I'm almost sure that he was watching him. They kind of showed it in a side scene to show an ominous shot of, you know, Merlin being in the know.
Okay. Oh, and yeah, he didn't plant the cameras in Oliver's house. That was Slade. So I was mistaken about that. So okay. Anyway, I got into a discussion with somebody at work about that, and that was a little, you know, I don't know. It's interesting to think that
you'd think that maybe she would be scanning for that or something.
You know,
I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I mean, no, the way she feels about him, I don't think she would ever let him have that kind of access. So.
He broke down her firewall.
No way. So,
yeah. Okay. So, all right. So let's get back to talking about Oliver's decision at the end to work with Merlin. Mm-hmm. So he's decided that he needs to have Merlin train him in order to defeat Ra's al Ghul in some fashion. This is after Tatsu gives him a little speech here that, you know, how he's like, I don't know how I'm going to be able to defeat him. And she's like, she talks to him about there being many different forms of death. Because she doesn't want him to die in that, but they're not just, you know, physical forms of death. There are other forms of death. And she says, in order to defeat Ra's al Ghul, you must be willing not just to die. So, you know, you have to, which he's already done that, right? I mean, he's already pretty much died.
Yeah.
But he has to be able to live knowing that what he had to sacrifice in order to beat him. And Oliver's like, well, what does that mean? And she says, well, it'll be whatever you hold most precious. So Oliver has to sacrifice what he holds precious in order, you know, to get to a place where he is able to defeat Ra's al Ghul. I think this is one of those conundrums, you know, that in order to, you know, like people we see in films and stuff, you know, in order to save all these people, you must take an innocent life. You know, it sounds like one of these riddles that we would see Merlin going through, you know, the ends justifying the means. It's like, in order for me to take care of Ra's al Ghul, which he's going to kill my sister, he's going to destroy my city, he might kill this guy that I hate, but look at all this other stuff. Oliver has to do something so heinous. Is it worthwhile for him to do that in order to protect and save all these other things that are good and true?
So what do you think it is that he's going to have to sacrifice?
I think...
What were your thoughts, at least?
My thought is that it's going to be something that, in order to save Thea from being killed by Ra's al Ghul, he's got to kill Thea. You know, it's like one of those, you know, like King Solomon sort of.
Well, see, that's awful. I don't think Oliver would do that. I mean, now he might.
He doesn't understand at this point. That's the whole thing. He's starting this journey, and he knows where he wants to get, but he doesn't realize the steps that he has to take to get there. And he's going to be too far along when he realizes that, oh, this is not what I signed up for. Well, it's too damn late, bud. And, you know, maybe I'm just overstating it, but, you know, maybe it's that he has to, you know, let something happen to the city. But, I mean, the whole thing he's been talking about all season is that he wants to reconnect with Thea, and it's all about protecting her. And it's also about finding his identity as well, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, sure.
So that's what we've talked about for his character. And at this point, Felicity has said that she was hoping that when he came back, he would have a new perspective on life, you know, and he's like, well, you mean a new perspective on you? Because he does. He does have a new perspective on life, and he has changed. But, you know, he has died a little bit inside. Now, it's not because he killed somebody. I mean, he did. He had to sacrifice part of himself. And, you know, and I don't know how mystical I want to get about the whole him coming back to life. You know, was he really dead? Was he mostly dead? You know, was there witchcraft or anything involved? Or are we not really? They don't seem to be getting into that. I think it's just it seems like just a medical condition that
just really strong penicillin tea.
It was, but it tastes like penicillin.
Yeah.
And, but you know, he's changed. He is different because he has gone through, you know, he's gone through hell, well, and he's come out the other side, and he's not the same Oliver.
I had two thoughts about what he would have to sacrifice. My first thought, right when she said that, you know, you'll have to sacrifice what you thought was most precious, what you think is most precious, is he'll have to kill Ra's al Ghul, which sacrifices his, you know, his ethics, his code of not killing and
right,
being a hero and not being a person.
But he was going to kill him in the first place.
Well, right, right. So that was my first thought. So yeah. then my other thought by the end is, you know, what he's sacrificing is he's going to be working now with Malcolm. So he's, again, sacrificing that code working with someone who is evil, who is, you know, he should have nothing to do with.
Yeah,
So he's sort of sacrificing himself, who he is. I don't know. That was my thoughts about what he would have to sacrifice. I don't know that it's so literal as someone dying, as he'll have to sacrifice someone dying. I think it's more his soul.
I know. I just and again, like I said, maybe I'm going too dark on this.
Oh no, I don't think so. you gotta contemplate. I don't even think. What's her Tatsu? Even said, she doesn't know what it is. Only you will know.
Right, and that's the thing. And Oliver's on a search for his identity and for meaning and stuff like that. So maybe it's going to be one of those things where, you know, he won't know what that is until he's in the fight. You know, and it's one of those. You know, maybe it's that whole Zen kind of thing where. Only in the moment will he know what it is he must do, and, you know, he does it, you know, like, maybe he has to die. Maybe he has to sacrifice himself in some fashion.
Yeah, he's already done that.
And die again. Well, I know, but he didn't go far enough. Like, he didn't really die. That's, you know, it's kind of it's the Star Trek II conundrum, right? You know, it's like, in order to save the many... You know, one has to be sacrificed, you know.
Yeah. Well, I think because he is the true hero, I think he's going to come around. He's going to see what Felicity's saying. And when it does get to that point of him having to make the choice of making that sacrifice, I think he's going to kind of do what Felicity did and say, wait. No, I can't go there. That's not who I am. I have to do this instead. I don't know what that'll be.
Yeah.
But,
well, maybe they'll have an episode, like, right towards the end of the season called The Sacrifice, and then we'll know. It's like, oh, good, this is the episode that deals with that.
There you go.
So, wow, lots of, point I was worried we weren't going to have enough to talk about for this episode.
Yeah.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, it was a lot of deep stuff this episode.
Yeah, and, So before we wrap it up here, we've got one piece of feedback, and this is a mystery to us right now. So Tyler West on Twitter wrote to us saying he apologize now to at Green Justice Pod for the rant email I'm sending their way tomorrow. Have to vent somehow about my favorite show. But we haven't received the email yet. So, Tyler, hopefully you can send that. We're interested to hear what you want to rant about.
Yeah, I was very anxious. I was waiting. I want to hear it.
I can see that there are some things going on in this episode that can cause a little consternation with some fans.
Yeah.
Especially all those shippers out there that are looking for Oliver and Felicity to get together because that is really looking like it's not going to happen at this point.
No. She's got other... Don't worry, though. She's got other... other options. I was trying to think of a saying. But, so, yeah, the only thing that I would rant about was the fact that at the beginning of this episode, they're trying so hard to find some evidence that will stick against Danny Brickwell so they can bring him into the police. And maybe, I don't know, killing the alderman, taking over the Glades, holding people hostage, taking over the police station. Other than that, I can't really think of anything. You know, maybe he didn't pay last time he went to Chili's. You know, he ran out on his check.
Yeah.
There's got to be something out there.
Yeah. I want his family dead. I want his house burned to the ground. And they were so busy. They were so busy doing all this other cool stuff in the episode that they forgot to put in all the Easter eggs that they normally do. The only thing that I saw that was kind of interesting was the Roy got confused. The thug at the bar confused Roy with that red streak, and he's like, "Sorry, wrong city."
So, I think he said wrong. Did he say wrong city or wrong suit?
He said wrong city.
Oh, did okay.
Yeah,
I was laughing so much. I kind of missed that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no. Maybe they have a 49th Street now that they're not doing the new 52 branding anymore.
Maybe we'll have to see if they do that.
Okay.
See if there are any other shout outs here. So, well, that was fun, Josh. There was a lot of interesting things here. I think this episode is the strong launching point for the rest of the season.
Agreed.
This puts us about halfway through, because there's 23 episodes this season.
Okay, so it's halfway through during, like, I don't know, the Duff commercial or something.
Halfway through the season, right.
All right. Well, I agree with you. Great jumping off point and a great finishing point for this little, Team Arrow trilogy that they did. I like the way that they ended with, I guess they didn't end with this, but they ended the battle with him, talking to the city.
Speechifying.
Yeah. He was inspiring them to continue the fight, you know, to continue standing strong. And also you can see how much what do they call it? Is that a figurehead or a symbol? He's truly a symbol of Central City.
Yeah.
Of Starling City. I said Central City. Wrong city.
Every time somebody came up and hugged him, I was just like, ow, ow, ow.
I thought the same thing when he went away on the zip line. Oh, I'm like, that can't feel good.
Yeah, he's ripping stitches and stuff like that. So
it's dramatic, though.
And one other thing we didn't get a chance to talk about, but we probably will deal with this next week, I'm assuming, is just that Captain Lance seems to now know that Sarah isn't actually the Canary. So I think he's going to start putting... He's a smart enough cookie. He was able to figure out that Roy was the Red Arsenal in this and stuff like that. So I think he's going to put all this together, and I think he and Laurel are going to have a talk by next episode because they seem to get to that.
Soon, huh?
Yeah. I mean, they do tend to move that stuff along. I mean, it's not – and again, I know next episode deals with Canary and stuff like that, but I didn't see anything that specifically said that Lance was going to have any kind of conversations. But I think we're going to get that moving along quicker than you know, what we thought last week, where it's like, boy, just he's going to get strung out for weeks here, but yeah. They are kind of wrapping it up.
More interesting stuff with Laurel then.
Yep. All right. So, well, thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Green Justice, and we'll be back next week.
Well, man, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode as much as I did, because this was a blast. I feel like we could keep talking about it. So if you're having as much fun as we are, why don't you pop over there to iTunes, leave us some feedback, or you know what? Hey, we're still waiting for Tyler. You can email us, Tyler, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Love to hear from you, or anybody else if you want to give your 2 cents or 5 cents, give us a buck, whatever it takes about the show. Or you can get on Twitter at Green Justice Pod, and you can visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
And you can also check out the other cool podcasts that Josh and I work on, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which currently is dealing with the Agent Carter mid-season series, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast, which does take place in the other city. Both of those available via randomchatter.com. And all these shows are also available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy the podcast, please be sure to tell your friends about us, because that's still the best way to get our name out there to everybody. Just tell them where they can find us. And remember, if you don't keep listening,
you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.